This podcast is sponsored by the ABCD School of Rock. For more information, go to www.abcdschoolofrock.com.
Order! Order! Please be seated for Pancast Movie Court.
Ahoy, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Pancast Movie Court. I'm being a lot more understated this time because normally I come into it very, oh, hey, here we go. But it's not because we're in a courtroom, so we should have a bit of respect.
But you just said ahoy, you threw me. You didn't even...
quiet, please, right, okay. For the defence. Welcome to Movie Court, the only podcast where you, the jury, have the final verdict. Now, I'd like to welcome to court for defence this time. Mr. Neil QC.
QC, thank you.
TLC, TCP, and bar.
An STD.
I'm sure. How are you today,
very
sir?
Very well, thank you.
Are you feeling very confident for today?
I hope so. Yes. I'm not going to say no, am I?
Are you more confident than you were last time?
Well,
for Transformers Age of Extinction?
That was the hardest one I've ever had to do. And I would like to find out the result because I tried my hardest.
So that was like defending like a child molester or
Jimmy
something, wasn't
Savile,
it?
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it's just a no-win.
Yeah, you're not. No,
no. We'll go on to the at the verdict for that one in a second.
Okay.
But first, for the prosecution. Hello, Daisy.
Ahoy, hoy.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Right, now this is the first time we've had a double team for the prosecution. Would you like to introduce your secret weapon?
My secret weapon is my father, Paul Cooper. So I've got to mind my swearing today.
Oh, really? You tell us that now.
Can I just add father and carer as well? She has issues, so...
We've done a podcast with her before, Paul. We know. We know.
And we've now got issues.
That's right. But it's great to introduce you to the shed. But
yeah. What a shed as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. But of course, it's not a shed today. It's a court.
It is.
So as people are milling their way into the courtroom, before we go any further, we have the verdict. My phone's just falling like that. The verdict for Transformers Age of Extinction. Now, I will just go through a few of the things that people said. Matt Williams just said guilty. Nothing else. Just guilty. Carlos Acosta said it was okay. We all know it definitely could have been better. But I'll say this, I'm glad I didn't have to go to the movies to see it. Guilty. Catherine Heffernan, said, can I say guilty if I've only seen the trailer? Yes, I think you can say you can say that. Dana Payne said, not guilty, loved it.
Oh,
yeah.
Mental.
Well, I didn't realise that they let people have like sharp implements in those kind of places where she lives. Dana, we love you. And Lorena Bencomo says she hasn't seen it. There's not enough vodka in my system to think this movie looks good.
So that's a guilty then.
So I think it is. Yeah. So here is the result and the verdict for Transformers Age of Extinction. Why isn't that coming out?
It's obviously not guilty. I want it.
Oh, no. No, no, no. Oh, I've turned it down. That's why. Let's do that again. Right. Yeah, goddamn son of a... Right.
Not guilty.
Right, that's a mistrial, actually, because I pressed the wrong button. It should have been this one. What a great way to start.
Guilty.
Right, well and truly.
Well,
goddamn
I thought
guilty.
I'd won them. False hopes. I demand a retrial.
Right, that's it. That's now the past. Let's consider today's court case. Daisy, would you like to tell us which movie you have brought to prosecute?
Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Okay. Now, before we go on to your opening statements, we of course have Clark Kent of the court to give us a little bit more about Four Weddings.
These are the facts of the case for Four Weddings and a Funeral. Released in 1994, was written by Richard Curtis and directed by Mike Newell, and starred Hugh Grant, Andy McDowell, James Fleet, Simon Callow, John Hannah, and Kristin Scott Thomas. With a budget of $4.4 million, it took worldwide $245,700,832. Andy McDowell waived a fee for appearing in the movie, taking percentage points instead. This eventually netted her $2 million compared to Hugh Grant's salary of $100,000. The poem read at the funeral is called Funeral Blues by W.H. Auden. Melanie Griffiths and Brooke Shields both turned down the role of Kerry, and Hugh Grant was not first choice to play Charlie. Alan Rickman was initially in the frame. These are the facts of the case, which I present to the court.
Thank you very much, Clark Kent of the court, and it did make me laugh when I saw that fact about Alan Rickman. If you really need to know the reason for... Oh, God, I've just turned it on. The reason for Alan Rickman is you just have to listen to Daisy's podcast and you'll get all of the backstory regarding that. Right, the opening statements. I think first for the prosecution. Daisy, would you like to give your opening statement?
Okay. So, Richard Curtis has committed many crimes over the last 30 years. He started by shoving unfunny Lenny Henry onto our screens in the guise of comic relief back in the 80s. Comic relief is a con. There is no comic relief. In fact, the only comic relief on the show was the bit where they go to Africa and look at the starving children riddled with AIDS in between any sketches. It wasn't until the early 90s Richard Curtis decided to commit a crime far worse than comic relief. It was casting bumbling, floppy-haired Tory fuckbags Hugh Grant to play the part of Charles in Four Weddings and a Funeral. This film sucked more dick than the hooker Hugh Grant picked up in the blowjob scandal. The film was as... The film was as funny and as long as a paedophile's to-do list. There was all but one funny scene in the entire movie, where the old puff dies from a heart attack and everyone cries. In fact, watching Hugh Grant trying to cry was fucking hilarious. His performance was so wooden, it was as if someone had thrown a piece of MDF in front of the camera. There were so many MDF performances that I had to click the sky button to make sure I was watching Four Weddings and a Funeral and not an old episode of Changing Rooms. The only way I knew for certain that it wasn't Changing Rooms is I'd much prefer to watch paint dry with Andy fucking Andy than watch this fucking horse shite. Actually, I hate this film so much, I'd rather watch my parents have sex every day for the rest of my life than watch this again. But possibly the worst part of this movie is the talentless Andy McDowell, whose personality and head shape can only belong in a game of Tetris. Her character is such a bitch that I'm willing the only funeral in the film to be hers and hope that her death is so painful and disgusting it would make the American X curb stomp look like Happy Days. The cast is smugger than Kanye West masturbating his own reflection, and the only demographic of this film is middle-class Jane Ashley shopping cunts that watch this over a cheese board and a glass of Merlot, snorting, laughing and nudging each other saying, "Aren't we British?" I totally believe that there is a hell, and it can be summed up in six words. Four weddings and a fucking funeral.
Thank you very much. That's for the prosecution. Paul, do you have anything else to add to that?
Well, I'm here, mainly here for moral support. As you can hear, Daisy has few morals. I would like to add that I was very disappointed with the font they used on the credits as well. I thought it was, you know, even Comic Sans would have been an improvement, but that, you've got to add that, yeah.
Okay, that's fair enough. Concise, to the point?
It was. Mine won't be so... explicit.
You can add a few fucks in there if you want. For emphasis.
I would just say, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Four Weddings and a Funeral, as we've now established, Richard Curtis, you're a fan of. But a stalwart of British TV. We must remember Blackadder. Everyone's a fan of Blackadder, are they not?
Yes. Blackadder was good.
Okay. So he's not all bad. Lenny Henry, I'm with you on that one. So this film was both a hit in the UK and America. We must remember that. It was a huge sensation at the time. And yes, it sure does have some terrible acting, like you said. Andy McDowell, none of us will forget some of those lines when we really should be forgetting them. And it is an example of what British comedy is about. Yes, it's a middle-class jaunt, but it's fun. It's, how shall I put this? I changed it a little bit because of what you said. It struck me. It's a fun, it's a jolly film. And it's a feel-good romance. And what's not to love in a feel-good romance? I'll bring more points to this later on, but just be easy on it, the jury. It's a fun film.
Thank you very much, Neil. Mm. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Is that pretty much your opening statement?
I would say I'm with you, and we're not judging it on the acting alone, because that line of dialogue where Andy McDowell said, "Is it still raining? I hadn't even noticed," is enough to make me hurl and blow chunks and almost shoot the screen. We must go look past that. We really must look past that.
Okay. Okay, well, I think what we'll do now, do you have cross-examining questions for each other?
I do.
Okay, if you'd like to do one cross-examination question first, and then I have some evidence that I'd like to bring.
Can I go first?
Absolutely, you go first for the defence.
With your liking of fruity language, what's not to love with the opening scene where they wake up late and their opening dialogue is just continuously fuck, 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 fuck.
I'll actually bring in evidence number A. Evidence.
Okay. Well, before you play it, I would just like to say just quickly, that alone is a funny part of the movie. And then to me, it just carries on in that sort of vein of funniness. Oh, that's the censor beat coming really late.
I'm in horror already. Yeah.
Well, let's just play it and see whether it is funny.
Oh, fuck.
There you go. Oh, so was that funny?
It doesn't quite come across though, just audio, does it? It sounds like I'm almost watching.
And to be fair, I've cut all the fucks together. So
no,
that
obviously,
isn't
just
how
to put it in a little bit more of context, they are racing to get to the wedding, aren't they? They're late. Mm. They're very late, and you see them banging around trying to get dressed and ready and to the wedding on time. And it is a funny scene. I genuinely do laugh at that scene.
Daisy, do you have something to...
What is not to love about the use of that?
Right. The reason I don't love this beginning scene is because it's such an easy go-to. It's like, oh, look, we're not just like upper-class British people. We can say the word fuck and we can swear. And it's the way that Hugh Grant does it is so fucking annoying, because whenever he says the word fuck, his hair flops a thousand times more than it usually does. It's also an annoying beginning scene because he has like a quirky sister and they're getting into this mini and then, aren't we fucking British? Aren't we? We just say the word fuck, fuck, fuck. I just find it really irritating.
Can I just ask though, are you actually attacking Hugh Grant or the character?
I'm attacking all of it. Mainly Hugh Grant, yeah, because I absolutely hate him. But I just think it's an easy go-to, and I think they were all sat. I can see them all sat around a table.
They could have actually ended the film there, because it summed up the whole film. That kind of we're British, but we're quirky, and there's a mini from someone who's an old bastard back from the kind of 50s and 60s. In the 60s, there was swinging Britain and swinging London, swinging Britain, or throwing our car keys in.
That's a different podcast. Yeah.
I've heard it on the estate up here. It's pretty game as well.
But, you know us too well.
But it was I'm backing Britain, and it was all about, you know, the mini. What was the thing with the mini with Michael Caine? It was always a mini job. Italian job, and isn't Britain fun? And then henceforward to the 90s, and you've got kind of Oasis and Britpop and all that sort of stuff. And it's just an advert for the Americans to say, we're cool, we're British, and we're a bit quirky. So it could have just ended.
Can I ask
after
though, what is wrong with just showing that we are a bit cool and we are a bit quirky?
Yeah, because
it doesn't show us really of what we are. None of us are actually like
but
that.
But what it shows is a section of British life rather than generically everyone is the same.
Who just, we all think are knobs, though, don't we? If you were an altar boy, you know, in between being abused, you'd have said knobs. You know, you'd have just been at that what's
because that's what you're looking at the time. Is that what you're saying?
Possibly
knobs. in front of your eyes.
But what I mean is, it shows a portion of British life, and we all know there are toffs and knobs in the British life. But you know, you're laughing with them. In some cases, you're laughing at them. But it's not wrong to show them. It's just like it's not wrong to show the working class, like the Full Monty, for instance. They stereotype the working class, don't they? Is it wrong to show these forms of life and show the Americans that we have these types of people?
Yeah, but they're only interested in the Toffs and Brideshead Revisited. And
exactly, or the Downton fucking Abbey, Hogwarts. It's all that type of thing. Mm. And that's not... why every fucking British film has got Hugh fucking Grant in it. It just really fucking winds me.
And Steptoe and Son wasn't a huge success overseas, I guess. I don't know. Mm.
Australia, it was massive. Mm.
I know that I'm supposed to be impartial. No, I'm supposed to be impartial.
Beat that.
We might as well close down now, I think. Yeah, as well.
That's it.
No, but don't you think that the Americans all think that we are like you, that everybody in Britain is like Hugh Grant?
But if it makes them gullible to come over and spend their hard-earned cash and keep our industries going, then... Hey, I can live with that.
Yeah,
hold on. This whole thing about it's a big advert for British industry, you know, and travel agents. It's a film for fucking travel agents. That summed it up. Your comment there summed up the whole film. It's an advert.
Mm. Absolutely. I just want to say, have you ever been to a wedding, like any of the weddings and full weddings and a funeral? They don't exist. You've got a shit DJ who's playing like Saturday night or...
Yeah, that never happens, is it? Come on.
You've got an uncle that's too pissed. You've got, you know, people are panicking about taxis. There was none of this in the film.
Mm. Apart from going back to one of the weddings, I have been to a wedding where somebody made a complete arse of themselves like he did with his best man speech. I have. And where the room was completely and utterly silent, and he was saying things about shagging this girl and shagging that girl. I actually audibly heard.
And what did you say to the bride after that?
I was a bit like Simon Callow in that movie, which I actually still laugh at that scene. I was going to bring it up later on, but I'll bring it up now. It's one of the scenes that really, another scene that makes me laugh in the movie, is when he's doing that speech and everybody's audibly sighing and almost cringing. He roars with laughter, and I join him in that roar of laughter because I just think I've been in that situation and it's blood curdling.
Okay.
Okay.
You know. Okay.
So there are bits.
Daisy, do you have a question for the defence?
I do. Okay. Can you give me any redeeming qualities of the self-centred, cheating, Yankee slut fuck Carrie in the film?
Got good shoes.
She's got nice hair.
Oh God, no!
Awful. No, you don't like that sort of hair.
No,
she's full of nice hair.
She's full of nice hair. There's a quote.
No,
great.
I did actually in my opening statement say that I'm not going to try and defend Andy McDowell or her character because that was one that I didn't like. I will admit that, but we've got to look past her.
But any as a female protagonist in this, is there anything that makes her different from any other girl that he should fall in love with? There's no reason why.
They call her duck face, don't they, in the movie? He should have really been with her, I suppose.
Yeah.
There you go.
He should have done.
But he treated her like shit, didn't he?
Yeah, and you could root that he should go with her and enjoy the movie still.
Mm. Or even the other one, what's her name?
Oh, Kirsten Scott Thomas. Yes.
Yeah, another one.
Yeah.
So you could root that he goes for somebody else.
Okay. Right, now, have you got other questions you'd like to ask each other?
Because
I'll just hold on to them. Okay. I'm going to play a couple of clips. First of all, this one I put, Name My Wife. I can't remember what that was for. Was just listen.
So, John, how's that gorgeous girlfriend of yours?
She's no longer my girlfriend.
Ah, dear. Still, I wouldn't get too gloomy about it. Rumour has it she never stopped bonking old Toby Delisle, just in case you didn't work out.
She is now my wife.
That was the one. See, that's what gets me. I'm going to show my colours on this one, I will. It's like Toby Delaris or whatever. Who has a friend as a name like that?
But you don't hang around in those circles. Nor do I, granted. But they probably do in those circles.
Why couldn't he just be called John Smith?
Exactly. That's my point.
But it would have had to have a Tarquin in the middle.
Well, that's just what I'm saying. That's the whole...
Toby Delaris. Exactly. I mean,
it would have got a bigger laugh in Los Angeles, that's why, I think.
What, Toby Delaris?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hmm.
And I just think that... I mean, how did they sit down and think, right, okay, what we need to call this character a name. What are we going to call it? Toby Dolaris. Toby Dolaris. Have you ever met... I've met somebody called Toby. Mm. Have you ever met somebody with a second name called Dolaris?
No.
Is that a British name?
I've seen a car. Oh,
no, I've eaten a Toby. I've done that. I've never met anybody called Toby.
But I think it's just a fact of trying to... Like you said, it's trying to... And it's not a bad thing to be stereotypical in that sense. Because it happens a lot. I don't think it is a bad thing.
I would say that Richard Curtis falls foul of it in pretty much all of his movies.
Yeah. Hey, we're not defending or prosecuting other movies.
No, but we're looking through, aren't we? Which is what you want to do. You want to look past.
And... I want to look at this movie and why you should enjoy it.
Hang on a sec. But that's basically saying, like, all the major components of this film. Let's look past that. What should we look at? The titles or...
The font?
Yeah, the font.
Just enjoy
Don't
it.
Don't forget the font.
Yes.
He says destroying his microphone. Sorry.
No, I mean, enjoy it for what
it
is.
Where are the technicians, for Christ's sake, in this place?
Here you go. I've just technologized it for you.
Techno.
There you go.
You're singing a song for us.
I don't know. Right, let me just play this next. This is Gerald the Priest.
But my name's Fiona.
I'm Gerald.
What do you do?
I'm training to be a priest.
Good Lord. Do you do weddings?
No, not yet. I will, though, of course. Jolly nerve-wracking.
Yes. Rather like the first time one has sex.
Well, I suppose so.
They're rather less messy, of course, and far less call for condoms.
Rowan Atkinson.
Rowan Atkinson.
Don't like Rowan Very Atkinson.
Worse. No, not a massive fan of Rowan Atkinson.
Why?
I just that he plays the same thing in every. I suppose one of my most annoying quote. What's it in, when he's in Blackadder? He goes, "Matt, more like Jock McMad from Madville." Blah blah blah. He's always doing that kind of. Dun, 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 dun. And even when he's not talking as Mr. Bean, he's still doing exactly the same thing.
Okay,
and that's why
his head
like
movements
him.
Are always the same.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Even in the Snickers advert.
I was about to go off a tangent.
To be fair, one of the things that made me laugh was the laugh, that priest laugh.
Where have you heard that? Oh, Mr. Bean. Next.
And then the last bit. I'm going to save that bit. I'm going to have that. Play it again. I like that. I'm going to keep that. The last clip that I've got is Naughty Little Rabbit. Just for the sounds.
So this is really embarrassing to listen to this with my dad.
Yeah, I feel I'm going red now.
upper middle class humour at its best.
Yeah. And to me, the only funny bit of that was when his head keeps like just going on the bed. Remember that bit?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the clips. Please give Daisy another question. Quick.
Careful. Well, I was just going to say, I mean, is it with this type of film, with it being a romantic comedy, are you opposed to romantic comedies as well, or is it just about their status of being bumbling toffs?
I think I'm not a massive romantic comedy fan anyway. I think the reason why is because you just see the formula immediately. I know exactly who he's going to fall in love with. I know what the ending's going to be within 5 minutes. You're not going to get that when you watch a horror film. I mean, you know that people are going to get stabbed, butchered, but at least that's interesting. At least you don't see where, you know, what's going to, you know.
But it is a formula that works, though, isn't it? Obviously, because they keep churning them out, rightly or wrongly.
Love Actually is kind of a ditto.
Which is one we've already had on the movie court, which was found guilty. Do you not think that those sort of movies are of its time, though?
Possibly.
Because I can't remember the last real good romantic comedy that was a success at the box office. They're all mediocre successes, but, yeah, not, but they make not money. Box office successes like that was.
No, that was a huge success, and it spawned so many more imitations, didn't it?
Mm.
Set Richard Curtis on the road to not coming back of doing the same sort of thing. But I'm just putting it over that it's a romantic comedy. It is in essentially a harmless romantic comedy, regardless of whether bumbling toffs or, you know, working class, whichever. It's not a. It shouldn't be about that.
But it's not even that. It's the fact that it doesn't. It doesn't. It's not truthful. It's not believable. Like, if you meet somebody at a wedding, it literally is a one night stand, and you don't see them at another. It doesn't. You don't see them at another wedding. It just doesn't. There are so many factors in this that don't make it believable. And I think that's the problem that I have with rom-coms, is everything's just so
it's a rose-tinted view, and that's what it basically boils down to, is a bit of escapism. When you watch a movie, you're watching something to escape.
You know, why isn't there not a film about, you know, two people meeting up pissed in 17 Black? Or
I would imagine
The Rock, or, you know,
probably not in those situations, but I would imagine there's plenty of realistic type of films like that. And
there could well be when Daisy gets home and gets a computer out. She's thinking, I'm going to write a film. I'm going to write that now.
It's just a, you know, like I said, that rose tinted view of having a romantic comedy, just enjoying it for what it is, and that little bit of a romp. You know, to me, it made me chuckle. And I will.
Can I just say, the problem with romantic comedies is they're not funny enough. They are not funny enough to be called romantic comedies. They should just be called romantic, and then we're just going to crowbar some funny old hackneyed bits into it. That is my problem with rom-coms.
Mm. Okay. Daisy, do you have any more questions?
Okay. I want you to tell me, if you can give me one film where Hugh Grant doesn't play himself.
Does it have to be where he's actually on screen, or can it be his voice?
No, it has to be him on screen.
Because I was going
to
say, he was in a film called Pirates, and you wouldn't have known it was Hugh Grant, but it was done by Aardman Animation.
Right, that's probably why wouldn't have known. Oh, here we go.
Cloud Atlas. You ever seen that?
I have not
the
seen
sci-fi.
I've seen bits of that, but that is, and sorry, Judge, excuse my French, but that is one fucked up film.
But it's not Hugh Grant.
It's not. But everybody, you wouldn't know that Tom Hanks was in some of that, would you?
But I'm just saying that he can do it if he's given the right role.
Okay, so what? Hang a second. So what type of character does he play in this?
It's a time traveling mishmash of all sorts. I mean, like, Tom Hanks plays an Irish crew cut.
It's hard to explain.
Hard nut guy. It's just it's a really weird, weird film done by the guys that.
But what I'm saying is, he doesn't play Hugh Grant. And to be fair, if you were to turn away from the screen, you wouldn't know it was Hugh Grant. But because he's chosen to typecast himself into these bumbling British roles. Lair of the White Worm, you ever seen that?
Did we have this conversation last time? Why is that?
I think that I sounds... did speak about it.
Yes,
about
you the did. Madonna.
Well, he's in that.
Weird.
And, you know, it's not a typical Hugh Grant film, but this is before he'd done...
Right, before this. He made his name in... Okay, so...
That's his cash cow, isn't it? I mean, he's a bumbling Brit, whether you like him or loathe him. I mean, and I agree, most of the time you could chuck a chair in the room and there he is. But he's made a career out of that, and that's his choice.
And in his defence, he supports Fulham, so he's not all bad. Mm. Just got that in.
That may have turned the tide, that one.
What are you worried about? They're not even in the Premiership anymore.
It doesn't matter. Because I've always thought something like Notting Hill, I would class just as a straight sequel to Four Weddings and a Funeral. Because literally the same character.
Exactly.
But that's what it was. It was written to be like that because of the success of what Four Weddings was.
But yeah, you can understand that if he was then making a different film with different people. But if he's then being made, he's in a film written by Richard Curtis, you would think that they would maybe stretch him a little bit more.
But then if you go to Love Actually, where he's the Prime Minister, he's the same thing as being the Prime Minister. That's his pigeonhole now. That's what he's got himself into, and that's his cash cow.
He's made his money, I suppose.
And this is what I want to ask. How the scripts are written, do they put in these bumbling, boring pauses and these...
I would imagine that's in the direction, isn't it? Rather than...
Him directing himself? Because if I was the director, I would not tell him to do that.
That's probably the way he acts. I don't know. I don't know as a person. If you see him interviewed, does he like it when he's interviewed? I really don't know.
I don't know. I'm doing it now. I don't know.
But this is just mental. I mean, does he do the same thing, you know, with the scandal where he went and got a blowjob of some...
Yeah, Divine.
Divine. Did he say, can you...
Hang on, can we just... It wasn't Divine the John Walters...
No, it's Divine Brown.
Divine Brown.
Let's just get that... You know,
with an E,
that,
I think.
Yeah, because that would be a completely different kind of blowjob.
Yeah, that'd be up the Eddie Murphy Street. Allegedly.
Hey?
Allegedly.
Up the Eddie Murphy Street?
Yeah, I won't go into that.
No, let's not go into that.
Just look it up.
Okay, so do we have any more questions as cross-examination for each of you? Or are we ready for the closing statements?
Well, I'm just... But I'm turning to you.
We're all doing it now.
Sorry, this is the only. This is another question. So, with the script being so awful, and obviously we mentioned it, we touched upon the lines of "Is it still raining?"
Yeah,
I hadn't noticed. And I actually think, and I want to have your opinion on this, that the line after that, the Hugh Grant line, which is "Let me ask you one thing, would you might agree not to marry me?" is the most cringing,
but I don't,
more so than the raining line?
Yeah, I think that... how can I defend that? I can't, because I said it in my opening statement. I wouldn't defend it. It's just awful, and I don't even know how it got through the cut. Whether they thought it was that bad that they thought it might be funny, I don't know. I really don't know. Mm. But everybody in the cinema... I remember going to see it when it first came out. Everybody in the cinema laughed, but not with them or at it.
Oh, I see.
It was just, you could hear people say, that's all, what? Mm. Oh, so whether God, it was left funny. In there...
I didn't know whether that was like the 90s, we just accepted that type of
bad script. No, it really was that people in the cinema were like, oh, okay.
And is there also a thing with Andie MacDowell that all of her lines are always, they always sound like they've been ADR'd?
I think a lot of them have. Well, let's not forget,
even
digressing.
Even L'Oreal...
She was in
the L'Oreal adverts. They all sounded like they were ADR.
Do you remember one of her first films was Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan?
Yeah.
She had her whole voice replaced by Glenn Close.
You are kidding me.
No. So yeah.
You are kidding. She is just awful. Isn't she meant to be really difficult as well?
I have no idea. I don't know how she keeps getting...
Groundhog Day. She was in Groundhog Day as well, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah. Mm. We'll ask Bill when we speak to him.
We will, yeah. He won't take no shit from
every film she's in is like fucking Groundhog Day.
I can only think of one film where she was actually all right in, but that wasn't about her. It was Sex, Lies and Videotape.
Right, okay.
Steven Soderbergh's first film. But then she, you know, it wasn't about her, was it? She wasn't the main role. So,
but she always seemed to get movies. They're quite big ones, didn't she?
She's very talented.
Right. Let's have your closing statements then, please. For the defence first, Neil.
I'm just going to make it very quick. Four Weddings and a Funeral, it has all its flaws. We know it is. We must, like I said, look past the toffs and that and just enjoy it for the rom-com and everything it is. It brings out the romantic in you if you've got any in you. And I would say you're void of a little bit of sense of humour if you're not laughing with some of the situations that they're in. But if you don't have that sense of humour and you don't have the romance, then yeah, maybe I could understand you not liking the movie. But if you haven't seen it, give it a go. It's fun. But I like it.
Convincing. Okay.
It's raining in here and I hadn't even noticed.
Daisy, would you like to give your closing statement?
Would you like to do this?
Well, no, I turned it off when I saw the font, you know, as soon as it came on at the beginning. That's enough for me.
See, that's the thing. You may find this the most amazing film you've ever seen, if you never got past the font.
Just get past the font. It's a difficult one.
Yeah, we need to put it started already. Let him see it.
Absolutely. Well, my closing statement is, if you guys go with not guilty on this, you're just allowing Richard Curtis to cast Hugh Grant in another bad rom-com where he gets another bad American actress over here and does something that stereotypes us as Brits. Let's put an end to it now. Let's stop this.
I must just say, I'm not defending Richard Curtis as a director. He didn't direct this, did he? It was Mike Newell.
Mike Newell directed it, no. But as a film, that's what you're defending.
Yeah, but just this one I will defend. I'm not trying to defend
it. I will ask Daisy a quick question. Now, if you happen to write something and somebody offered it to Hugh Grant,
yeah,
what would you do?
I would...
Would you... And then he said, I'd love to do it. I think that's one of the best scripts I've ever heard.
I would cut my own throat.
Seriously?
Out. Yeah. I would not do it. I would rather, who would I rather? I would rather Kenny Cook do play the part and not have anybody watch
he's
the show.
He's doing Hamlet, so he won't get he's not available.
Yeah, you'll have to check his diary. I think you'll have to check that. Right then, so that you've heard all of the statements, all of the witness statements, all of the bits and pieces. So now it's down to you, dear listener. Please email us, pinecast@live.com, with your verdict of guilty or not guilty. And we will give you the answer when we do our next episode, when we don't know when that is because we haven't got one sorted out yet.
Don't admit that.
Well, you know, the next time that the court is in session. Shall I put it that way?
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Don't show them behind the curtain.
Goodness, no. It's raining in here and I hadn't even noticed. So thank you very much, Daisy.
Thank you.
For a wonderful, colourful...
as ever.
Prosecution. Thank you very much, Paul.
Prostitution.
Well, we're not that far away, I'm sure. Thank you very much, Neil, for a very brave defence.
Yes.
Very brave. Would you like to tell everybody where they can get all of our details?
Of course, they can go to our website, www.pancast.co.uk. They can pick us up on iTunes, just put Pancast in the search engine, or they can just email us at pancast@live.com.
Yes, and obviously email us at that address with your verdicts, or you can go on Facebook or on Twitter. Is there any other bits that we're in?
SoundCloud,
all those kids. Yeah. MixCloud, everything else. So thank you very much. We'll be back again sometime for the next movie court. So it's thank you from Neil.
Thank you very much.
Thank you from Daisy.
Thank you.
And thank you from Paul.
And thank you.
Thank you very much.
This podcast is sponsored by the ABCD School of Rock. For more information, go to www.abcdschoolofrock.com.